Hi, everybody. This is Scott Callon. Thank you so much for joining us. We're grateful for your time. I'm on the call with Ted Fujita, who is our lead independent director, and Martin Fackler, our head of global IR.
Hello.
I'm working off of the FY22 H1 corporate presentation, which is on our website. So this is Ichigo's first half earnings call. Let me go directly to the content. Page 7 shows the first half summary. We continue to generate stock earnings well above our fixed expenses, so we're structurally profitable. Stock earnings are growing, asset management has grown, sustainable real estate has grown. Clean energy is off a little bit this year based on a tax effect and actually adverse weather. We expect to be able to produce a lot of solar power during the summer, and we actually had quite a cloudy and typhoon season, so we're off a little bit, but clean energy is very much on track. I won't go into detail here. This is kind of the highlights, because I'll go into those details as we go along, but it's been a very strong first half. Page 8 shows the operating and financial results. OP up 58% year-on-year, net income up 54%, EPS up 56%. I think the backdrop to this is two things that are structural that are very important, I think, for us to communicate to you. The first is that the Japanese institutional real estate market is extraordinarily strong. And it's probably not the case that you would understand that from the headlines, because there's been a little bit of a bifurcation in the market. There was overlending to weak credit, primarily individuals, and there's been a pullback of that in financing. So assets that are kind of $3 million or less, several million dollars or less, are weak relative they were a year ago, because it was in fact overheated. But in the $5 million, the $10 million, the $20 million, the $50 million, the $100 million and more assets, it is an extremely strong market conditions. And to give you some more granularity on that, we're having clearly a pickup in pricing and a decrease in cap rates that appears to be linked, one, to increasing investments by global investors in Japan. There appears to be both flight money coming here. Appears also to be just kind of a broad realization that in a deeply uncertain world, Japan offers a package of economic and social and political and return stability that is very, very attractive. So global investors are increasing their presence here. And second of all, it's been a noticeable uptick in investments by the huge Japanese life insurers and property and casualty insurers. And we think that those two phenomena, I've touched a little bit on with the global guys already, are being driven by what makes Japanese real estate attractive. One, global uncertainty and kind of safe haven, a very secure return opportunity in Japanese real estate. And two, interest rates, you know, at some point perhaps in our lifetimes they go up, but I think there was an embedded view in the market that perhaps rates were finally going to turn up. In fact, they've turned down. So in a world that's uncertain, that offers no yield, Japanese real estate offers a certain and stable yield. So the truth of the matter is that we do have a wind at our back. This is a very, very strong operating environment that appears to have some structural underpinnings to it. The second point I'd make, though, that is much more specific to Ichigo, it also appears to be the case that there is some structural underpinning to our ability to deliver outcomes that our competitors can't. It does appear to be the case that we're putting distance between ourselves and our peers and our ability to add value to assets and do things that they can't do. And so the truth of the matter is that we are increasingly taking on quote-unquote difficult assets in difficult situations. They're difficult for some of our peers, but they're not nearly as difficult for us. I'll talk through a hotel value-add case. That's kind of an easy case to understand because it involves us deploying some AI technology and revenue management that what we have and no one else does have. And so we think we have a clearly differentiated ability to deliver success in hotels that other people don't have. And we're experiencing that, and we think we're delivering that in retail and office assets also. So it's a very, very strong operating environment. And it should not be surprising that we're generating these kinds of returns given our capabilities. Turning to page 9, we have the segment earning details. At the top of the page, we generally point to what we think is the most important part of our earnings stream, which is our stock, meaning ongoing earnings. Base asset management fees are up 4% year-on-year. Rental comes up 7% year-on-year. Gains on sales in this market, you know, it continues to be a seller's market with the kind of assets that we have and the kind of value that we deliver in assets. So that's up 133% year-on-year. Clean energy is, as I said earlier, is an underperformer based on primarily tax burden and a little bit of adverse weather. If you turn down to operating profit, one of the things you'll notice is asset management is down 10% year-on-year. Clean energy is down 14%. Sustainable real estate is up 75%. One of the things you should know is what's pushing down all three segments is allocating R&D and brand spend to each of the business units. So one way of dealing with we're investing for the future and we have increased kind of, let's say, R&D spend, for example, is to put that in a separate bucket called R&D and you show the segments without kind of these costs that are growth investments for the future. We actually prefer to go the more conservative route, which is like if these costs are being borne, they're going to be borne by the operating units. We think it's the right way to link total kind of operating profit to the segment, some of the segment operating profit. We think it's the right way to impose discipline on the operating units, who, of course, kind of participating in, we want the spend to go forward, but it also means you don't have the problem of some big squishy headquarters bucket where a bunch of money is being spent without kind of discipline and, if necessary, an appropriate pushback from the BUs. So anyway, there is some push-down effect in each segment because of the growth spend we're doing nonetheless. We're up 53% year-on-year. It's a very, very strong place to be, and we think our growth spending that we're doing now will, of course, deliver significant return over a multi-year period. Page 10 shows the results of this year's Nikkei 400 index inclusion for the fourth year in a row. We are a member of the Nikkei 400, which, as you all know, is Japan's index, which tries to measure companies that deliver good outcomes to shareholders, high ROE, high earnings, high market capitalization. As part of our 2019 midterm plan, which came to a close, we did also target not just being in the Nikkei, in the JPX Nikkei 400. We wanted to be in the top 200 firms, and we also achieved that, as disclosed in the August rebalance. Jumping to page 12, I'll go through this quickly. These are the slides that we show on an ongoing basis. We think this is the kind of information you need to understand who we are and to track whether or not we're delivering about what we should be doing. So page 12 shows the business model, one element of the business model, which is a combination of stock and flow earnings. The far right-hand side is the forecast. One bar into it to the left shows the result thus far in the first half, and we are above what we expect to be for both stock earnings and flow earnings. Page 13 describes how we build embedded forward earnings over time because we do not actually realize all the effects of our value-add activity, and that shows up, and these are third-party appraisals of what our unrealized gains are. Page 14 shows that these third-party appraisals or unrealized gains are actually massively underestimate how much value add. Generally, something like 2 to 3x is what we deliver relative to what the third-party appraisers have said. Well, will be the gains on sale from our asset portfolio. 15, another important KPI to us. It's not super useful to generate accounting income with actually generating cash. And so one of the powerful elements of our business is we are very robust generators of cash, and our economic operating cash flow year in and year out exceeds our net income. Turning to financial metrics on page 16, as you can see, we continue to fund very long-term. Average debt is about 10 years. when we continue to find that ever decreasingly low prices. What's interesting about that is it's really, I think, a powerful statement about how strong our balance sheet has become. We do not actually empathize with the banks borrowing as cheaply as possible. We emphasize with the banks borrowing as flexibly as possible, as long-term as possible, as locked in as possible, with the least amount of amortization as possible, despite throwing kind of all these things at the banks. They're still willing to lend to us at lower rates. So that's fine. We'll take that. But it's not the highest priority. The highest priority is having an absolute bulletproof balance sheet to support the ongoing durability of our returns. Page 17, we did our first green bond issuance. As you know, we have a very strong commitment to sustainability. We are a sustainable infrastructure company. This would be an example of external counterparties recognizing kind of those sustainable elements in our business and financing them for us. 18, we've extended our share buyback. We actually did intend to buy back all 3 billion yen in the first quarter. It didn't happen, quite honestly. The reason why it didn't happen is because when you give an order to a trust bank and you say, go run with this, they do offer you an opportunity to say, you know, do you want to buy at 4,000 yen per share? And you go, no, you know, but we think the stock is really, really cheap, so we're going to kind of put up a number, and I won't give you the number. That's a lot higher than the current share price. So we put that number out, and then the stock went up even higher than that. We still believe the stock is very attractive value, and we fully intend to complete this buyback during this three-month extension. Page 19, we launched our first shareholder program. For those of you who are long-term Japan investors, you would know that this is fairly common in Japan for companies that have shareholder programs. What we've done here is actually there are two first evers. One is that, and this kind of speaks to our sense of fiduciary responsibility. Every other company thus far, when they do a shareholder program, it's only for the kind of the parent company shareholders. They do not include the shareholders of the REITs they manage, of the Yoko we manage. We work for all of our shareholders, including our REIT shareholders, our Yoko shareholders. So we're actually the first company ever in Japan to embrace those REIT and Yoko shareholders, meaning the full spectrum of all Ichigo listed entities, which are four of them, and the shareholders, all of them, are involved in this program. The second thing is this is a J-League ticket program where we offer tickets to the J-League, is, of course, Japan's professional soccer league, to every single J-League game at every single J-League club. There have actually been instances where companies say, hey, we have tickets, you know, for a club in Saitama, but Saitama, well, this is actually nationwide. So we're the first to do that. The program has just been announced literally in the last 2 weeks. At this point, we have 5,000 shareholders of about 50,000 in total, so 10% of our shareholders are participating in this, despite it being brand new, and us committing them to basically through a letter that we sent in the mail. And given the amount of feedback and given the performance in our REITs and Yoko Plus announcement, it does appear that this is proving to be a significant success. This is our first move in this space. You should expect us to do more. We think this is a really interesting example of delivering something that kind of speaks to our values and builds a deeper connection with our shareholders, which is to say, you know, fairly common in Japan is they send you, like, you know, a bag of rice or something like that, or, you know, the ability to buy books or something like that. This is very much in the, look, we want to support community development. These soccer clubs are in every single prefecture. They have local fans and communities, and we want to give you an opportunity to participate in that. One key element of the program is also that you do not need to be the shareholder to use the tickets. So this is very explicitly, hey, you're originally from Toyama Prefecture, you moved to Tokyo, but your brother is still in Toyama. You sign up. All costs are borne by Ichigo. You sign up for the program. You get these tickets, and you send them to your brother, to your brother-in-law, your junior high classmate. So it's fun, it's interesting, and we think it's really distinguishing. Turning to page 21, let's talk through what we've done year-to-date in the first half in terms of buying and selling. It is, as I said earlier, continues to be a seller's market. Our gross margin is 29%. I mean, that's not super unusual for us. We actually we add value. And when we add value, selling mostly to professional investors, they figured out that we've added value, and they buy these assets that we've improved. So generally, you would expect a 20 to 30% gross margin, typically more over 25%. We're coming at about 29%. Each of the owners continues to have a high level of activity. It's about 27% acquisitions. It's also, however, almost no sales. That reflects kind of the business model. At this point, Ichigo owners spends the first half of the year gathering a bunch of assets that are high quality, leasing them up very rapidly, doing anything it needs to improve an asset, and then it sells in the second half. So you should expect to see sales coming out of Ichigo owners in the next 6 months. Going asset by asset, you can see that we've been net sellers of hotels. Hotels are the most sensitive asset class. We continue to be buyers of hotels. Also, we're adding, we think we're upgrading very significantly the quality of our hotel portfolio because that's the right thing to do. And so we're shedding kind of what we think are more normal assets. I mean, they're not bad assets at all. They're very good assets. But as you know, we have we built our own hotel brand called Anat. We've got all this activity. We have it's been extraordinarily successful. We have Anat operating in Tokyo. We have Anat operating in Yokohama. Next year, we're bringing up Anat in Hiroshima, right in front of the Peace Memorial. We will bring up Anat in Sapporo. It's highly likely we're going to be doing Anat in Fukuoka. So we're shifting kind of our hotel portfolio to these boutique lifestyle hotels that are highly differentiated. So we're shedding some hotel assets to make room for that. You can see that we've bought a significant amount of residential. So for all intents and purposes, that's owners. So the residential will come in, and you should expect it to go out the door within the next 6 to 12 months. Page 22 gives a simple example of a value-add case. I mean, this is who we are and what we do. We buy assets, we preserve and we improve them. So in this case, it was 2.5 years. We grew NOI of these hotels by 27%. We ended up, consistent with what I said earlier, the appraisers thought, the value was X. Their numbers proved to be, too low. And the key things that we did, we introduced a revenue management system. We upgraded the hotel reservation system. We converted a non-revenue generating space into guest rooms. We renovated the guest rooms. We replaced air conditioning, upgrading the air conditioning. We installed LED lighting to reduce electricity consumption and costs. Page 23 shows you the three listed investment corporations, two REITs and a YieldCo that we run. We think they're, everything we do at Ichigo is to try to be the single best operator and owner for our shareholders. We think they all are delivering against that. The office REIT is now yielding 3.7%. As of today, it's 3.6%, but as of last week, 3.7%. Hotels at 6%. There are some gains on sale in that. We do turn over our assets. We add value, and we think there's an opportunity to sell it and reinvest in an asset that we can, again, add value to. That's something we're going to do. So Ichigo Hotel has been doing that, and, of course, then we have the solar YieldCo Ichigo Group. Page 24 talks about the work we've been doing on actually a strategic priority of ours in the asset management space. In February of this year, so it shows up in last year's as a fiscal year, February 2019 transaction. But in February, we actually sold. That's what's so interesting about this. We have these very good assets. I told you we have very strong appetite for assets from institutional buyers, both domestically and globally. So in the case of February, we sold 10 residential assets to a large Japanese institutional investor. It is a 12-year mandate. So this is very – so we both got gains on sale in that transaction. And then we have an ongoing asset management mandate that runs for 12 years. So we get the ongoing kind of stock earnings from the asset management fees. This month, we will close the transaction, this time with a very big global institutional investor. It's also residential assets. It is a 10-year asset management mandate. We think this is high-quality business, and, of course, The asset management business involves no capital commitment, so it, of course, is a nice driver of ROE for us. Page 25 and 26 show the kind of ongoing growth plan and growth activity in the clean energy business. We have solar plants coming on and wind plants coming on over the next couple of years. 27 is the final slide in the main part of the deck, and I'm happy to talk about the main part and in the appendix also or any issue that anyone wants to bring up. We did a small acquisition of a business development consulting firm. I mean, it's probably best to think of it as kind of a highly data-driven, significant IT capability consulting firm with the ability, with we thought a set of capabilities that would work for us in terms of their ability to help integrate IT into existing businesses and develop new businesses using the IT capabilities. So we were a client, have been an ongoing client of them. We think they're very, very good. But overwhelmingly, they serve kind of all sorts of Japanese companies. So we think it's both a growth opportunity for them, and we wanted to kind of bring them in-house because we like their skill set and technology and think we're going to be able to grow very well together. It's a very small transaction, so it's actually not material from an economic perspective at this point. If they grow, it could prove to be material over time. So those are what I intended to talk with you before turning to question and answer. So now we'll begin Q&A. To ask a question, you press star then one. If you want to withdraw it, you can then press star then two. So any questions or comments, star then one. So it looks like we have a question from Greg Brio.
Yes, hi Scott. This is Greg at Point 72. Thank you for the presentation. My question is regarding the comment you made earlier in the presentation on the flight money, so to speak, and the fact that you were attracting additional institutional investor flow. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit, from which region are you seeing this kind of additional interest? Are people kind of switching money out of Hong Kong possibly into Japan? Any color would be useful. Thank you.
Right. So I hope I didn't use a word that was too controversial. Flight money in a very general sense, right? Because what's interesting, Greg, is we're seeing money coming in from the U.S., Europe, and Asia, like across the board. In certain cases with more strained, and I'm not going to use specific country names, but with some countries with more strained circumstances in Asia, that's kind of more obvious. But it does appear to be, it's all, of course, totally legal, totally above board. Maybe I should say flight money-ish, feeling money is 15% of it, 85% of it is. The world feels really uncertain, and Japan does look to be far more certain. And, our generalized view on Japanese real estate has been that it's been very attractive for a very long time, and it's taken a long time for the world and Japan to figure that out. These are investors in the U.S. and across the board, in U.S., Europe, and Asia. They look at the cap rates in their country. They look at where they fund. So even leaving the uncertainty issues aside and kind of the spread is, because rates are so low, they get a little of a spread in almost all environments, but it's not nearly as big as Japan. So in Japan, you get a much bigger carry, and you get kind of more certainty. And frankly, most of the world is underweight Japanese real estate. So if you want to just kind of normalize yourself up a little bit, it implies you add some money to Japan. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much. And one follow-up, if I may,
sure.
Regarding one of your flagship office properties in Odaiba, can you comment a little bit on where you are, at which stage of the value-up you are, and what are you thinking? I believe this is probably the big one on page 48 in your list of assets. And
yeah.
Just wondering what the plan is there. Thank you.
I think the honest answer is, what the plan is, we haven't decided. It has been a very, very successful value add. You know, I probably should sit down with the CEO, and we should decide together if we think we're 60% done, 70% done, or 80% done with the value add. There's more to be done, which is why we could continue to hold it. But there is, you know, as you know, one of the things that we do on a regular basis is we do tenant interviews, tenant surveys, and interviews to find out, you know, what their needs are. We've actually just gone through another round with all tenants at Odaiba and come up with a good list of things that they would like to see improved. You know, what's really interesting about that is that kind of systematic ongoing effort to understand how tenants feel and what they want. You would think people would do this, and they don't. It is shocking to me that there is not this kind of systematic, ongoing process and program that is disciplined, that reflects who we are. We are owners who serve tenants, and therefore we should be talking to our tenants or our customers. So, you know, we have flexibility if we want to sell the asset at a very high profit, and you know, quite honestly, we haven't made a call. And we will, until the very last day that we own it, we will be continuing to work to serve tenants and make improvements. And so that's kind of what the current plan is. But we're looking carefully at it. It's big. So you're right, and you're smart to focus on it. It will be a key decision, and you know, probably we'll make a call on it, what we want to do, certainly in the next 12 months.
Understood. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks. We have another question this time from Michael at Polaris.
Hi, Scott. It's Michael speaking.
Hi, Michael. Thank you
for taking the question. I have a bunch of questions. First question on page 17, the green bond.
Yeah.
Is there a tax benefit for you or buyers of the green bond?
This one's easy to answer, no.
And what was the rate at which the bond was issued?
Just one second, I'll get you a number.
And in the meantime, you expanded the residential exposure quite a bit, and the hotel exposure, as percentage of Ichigo's real estate portfolio, has decreased as you indicated a few quarters ago. Can you talk a bit about the residential business and where do you see that going and a bit of the dynamics you currently observe in the market?
So let me answer your question on the rate on the bond. It was a little bit above 70 basis points per annum, so for 10-year debt.
Great.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. That was nice. And Michael, on the residential business, are you asking specifically about Ichigo Owners? Because that's our primary kind of company operating entity that we're doing residential, or are you asking more broadly?
Both, please.
Okay. So look, the challenge with residential is that and Japan has effectively quasi-rent control across kind of every asset, and that's not a bad thing at all. It is what it is. It's meant to provide a social good. You don't want to have a result of underinvestment in assets from that, and so if it's too strict, it can create that problem. But the result of that is typically it's very hard to get the kind of return investing in residential when you do value add. If you make a substantial improvement with a company, it's far more likely you can end up with a rent increase that reflects that. And even then, it's hard, which is why, as Ichigo, you know, we kind of have these upfront discussions with our tenants. You know, we'd like to do this. What are your needs? Okay, you want a new security system? It's going to cost a little bit. Are you willing to pay us 3% more in rent for us to do that? Et cetera. And that's just really, really hard to do at scale with individuals. And in general, individuals, they just say no. So it makes it a little bit tougher for us to do very much in. Now, having said that, Ichigo Owners has become very involved. But their specific, you know, it's become the heart of their business model is they buy empty resi. So we'll do upfront agreements with, and I've talked about this before, with developers on they're going to deliver an asset to us to this spec at this time. We don't take construction risk on it or development risk on it after deliver at that, but it will be empty. And one of the things that we do is we have significant leasing capability. And so we'll buy this asset. It's empty. We'll generally spend about 6 months fully leasing it up. And by the way, because you're taking on kind of this is empty and you need to fill it up, the result of this is we do not take quality risk at all. These are always, they're brand new. They're central Tokyo in great locations. And if you, as soon as you have it, you just kind of, you lease it up. It's very easy to lease. So that's become kind of the central element of our approach to residential, meaning we buy residential assets that are typically a 6 to 12 month hold, and that's it, and they're gone, and we move on. It's the office assets, it's the retail assets, it's the hotel assets you'll see as kind of holder for a longer duration. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And you said you had a number of questions. Feel free to ask more if you want.
Yes, please. Can you elaborate again on the share buyback? I didn't quite get the message on why the buyback hasn't been finished with regards to the trust bank you mentioned.
So the way Japanese insider traders rules work is you hand a buyback off to a trust bank, and they, if you want to be very, very safe, and we want to be very, very safe, and once you hand it over to them, they do all the execution. And so we've put this to a trust bank. They're going to execute this. We have no ability to control the outcome. Other than up front, before the buyback occurs, you are allowed to tell them, you know what, we want to buy the, you know, buy, you're going to do your buyback, but don't buy above price X, right? So for better or for worse, we chose a price X that was well above where the stock was at the point that we announced the buyback, because I think the stock was probably like 330 yen or something like that. We put a number a lot higher than that. Today's closing price is, I think, 440. It went above the level we gave them. So that's what happened. And so now, does that mean that we – so, you know, I think this is, it's perfectly fine to say I was just stupid. You know, on the other hand, we try not to avoid situations where we have tail risk, you know, where like, some could be some sort of squeeze and we end up buying back the stock at 900 when it only trades 900 for a second because somehow we've allowed that to happen and there's been some problem in the market. So anyway, we put in a level that maxed out where the buyback could occur. The stock went through it. Okay, well, we're just going to reload. And needless to say, we've raised the level. We think the stock is attractive, and we will be buying it.
Okay. Makarimashita. Understood, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I think we're done. Thank you, everybody, very, very much. We're grateful for your time, and it truly is an honor and a privilege to work for all of you. Have a good day.